Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday, and in studio, my co-host.
My name's Fred Williams, and I'm a creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, it's so great to have you here. You're involved with Creation Research Society, CRS, such an esteemed organization, and we love you guys. And you've brought a copy of Creation Magazine.
That's right. It's from the group Creation Ministries International.
Yeah, and what a fabulous issue of a magazine.
Oh, this is one of the best.
This is. How many years have you been reading Creation publications?
Oh, probably about 10 years at least.
Okay, 10 years. And I think I started reading Creation material back in the late 70s. So this edition is just tremendous.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for this magazine, without exaggerating, it's the best one I've read in, I don't know, many years.
People should subscribe. They should get Creation Magazine. These guys are located in Australia. This is another organization, Creation Ministries International, and their website is creation.com. And wow, talk about a good domain name.
Oh, absolutely.
Creation. So, Fred, let's begin with, wow, one of my favorite stories is on page 7, and it's about DNA and our genes, the genes that human beings are built out of, our bodies.
Yeah, kind of, and it's based off a computer, looks like a computer programming language with the DNA, right?
It is. Inside every cell in our body, billions of cells, there's this DNA software code that builds the human being.
It instructs how certain proteins are manufactured, and it's like a blueprint for the body. But it's real simple, huh, Bob? It's very...
it's so simple, you could just imagine how it evolved.
Yeah.
No, it's wildly complex, far beyond what they imagined even 5 years ago.
Oh, even 10 years ago, I think you had a TV show with when you were debating Eugenie Scott, right?
That's right. She's a famous anti-creationist. So why don't we look and see what... In this article, it sort of gets around to the argument that she was making, which was so absurd. But Fred, the scientists are sort of saying that we're very similar to chimps. In fact, we're really pretty simple to a worm. So what's the story here?
Well, you know, basically, at one time they thought we had between 50 and 70,000 genes. And then at one time, well, they thought, well, it's got to be 100,000. Well, when they've actually done the studies and were able to count the genes, it came in around 20 to 30,000 genes.
20 to 30,000 genes, depending on how you define a gene, for one thing.
Yes,
and
but
it turns out that worms have 20 to 30,000 genes.
So I guess we're on par with the worms.
Yeah, and the evolutionists, when they said, well, look at the similarity between a human and a chimpanzee, it's 97% similar. Can't they just open their eyes and see that a chimpanzee cannot write a book on how to build bridges? Can't they see the extraordinary difference between humans and chimps? And they thought that because there's similar proteins and all, that we must be 97% the same.
Well, this very magazine had a chimpanzee do some artwork and gave it, you know, the painting materials. And it painted what some people might have paid money for. In fact, I think some evolutionists probably did, but it was complete random gibberish.
Right.
No artistic talents whatsoever.
So the evolutionist says, well, look at this. This is bewildering. We have the same number of genes as a worm does. And they at first they thought, wow, that's weird. But then they try to figure out why. And the answer to why is so cool, and it's just another asset in the creationist arsenal. It turns out that our genetic code is staggeringly more complex than we thought just a few years ago. Our genes can multitask, and by a process that they call alternative splicing, a single gene can do multiple things. And it is very involved in regulatory functions and especially the development of embryos.
Yeah, this is incredible news because, again, for the longest time, scientists thought that a gene did one thing. That it was assigned one task to accomplish in the body. And now what they're finding out is that a gene can do multiple tasks. A single gene, it can create different kinds of proteins.
Yeah.
Using, through some RNA transcription process. It's remarkable. And, you know, it goes along with how multiple genes can also play a role in just one function in the body. The complexity is staggering.
It's almost like their arguments are so simplistic. You know, they say, well, giraffes were hungry and there were only leaves on the tops of trees, and so their necks stretched up. I mean, that is just so absurd, so simplistic, so embarrassing. And it would be as though they said, well, if you look at the number of words in Einstein's theory of relativity, and you look at the number of words in the script for, say, that movie Dumb and Dumber, turns out they're 97% the same. It'd be like, what a juvenile comparison. It's juvenile. And so it turns out that when Eugenie Scott said on Bob and Yurt Live 10 years ago almost, that we now know almost everything we're ever going to know about DNA, and I immediately wrote it down, dated it, timed it, said, Eugenie, I want to give you the chance to retract that.
And what did you say at the time? You thought we knew, what, maybe 5%? I can't remember.
A small percentage of what we will eventually learn about DNA. We're only just beginning to understand what's going on in this sophisticated language, this blueprint that God used to create every living species on Earth. And her argument was, I said, Eugenie, give me evidence that evolution is true of the higher functions like eyesight, hearing, echolocation, flight. Give me evidence that they evolved. Just give me two or three pieces of evidence. And she said, aha, use the word evidence. That's code word for creation. I'm like, okay, Eugenie, whatever, go ahead. But give me, so after an hour, she gave one piece of evidence, one. She said, junk DNA is proof that there's no God, no creator.
Yeah, at that time they thought that as much as 97% of the DNA could be junk.
Right, and it turns out, I said, Eugenie Scott, don't you think we're just beginning to learn what this stuff does? She's like, oh, no, we figured it out. We know most of what we'll ever know. And I asked her to retract it. And now the headlines, if you follow headlines on junk DNA, turns out the junk is not junk.
Not so junky at all.
The junk is vital for life. If you don't have the junk, you get a disease. So the junk has functions that we're only beginning to learn.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some genes, it doesn't look like they perform a function. We don't know what that function is, but what we're learning is if these genes suffer a mutation, it causes a disease of some sort. So that doesn't that say that gene had some important role?
Yeah, it wasn't junk.
It wasn't.
It's keeping you healthy and alive.
And some of it's some of these genes aren't necessarily transcribing a protein, but they're regulating other genes and what they do in transcribing proteins. So they do have a function, and they're critical.
And a given gene will produce multiple RNA transcripts. Genes can do all kinds of things that we're only beginning to learn, and that all points to the awesome creative ability of God. And by the way, Fred Williams, this stuff is coming out of Nature Magazine and Science Daily. The fact that, yeah, we have the same number of genes as worms, but it turns out that they're wildly multitasking.
That's right. And it's I'm glad you brought that up, because both Nature News and Science Daily are quoted here, and the websites are given. And I actually went out on these websites and did a little research. And I'm curious, Bob, what percentage of these genes do you think multitask? It's not in this article.
It's not in this article here in Creation Magazine.
But it was mentioned in one of their references.
I would guess. Like, they think there's a gene for hair color. There's a gene for eye color. My guess is there's a complex web of genes that interact to produce these what we think of as simple functions. So I would guess almost every gene they've ever studied multitasks.
Well, so far that they say 94%. So I think you're right on,
because 94%
of the genes they've looked at, or they believe multitask.
They have figured out how that they do multitask.
That's right.
And the other 6%, they just might not know yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
94%
is
staggering.
It's so awesome. And this also helps us to understand why there's so many more problems with embryonic stem cell research than there is with adult stem cell research, because much of the human genome has dual functions involving regulating the development of the embryo. And so you take a baby, this grisly experiment like Dr. Mengele of the Nazis, and you start experimenting on these tiny, tiny little boys and girls, and you try to grow organs out of them and do this despicable cloning and mixing them with animals and all kinds of stuff. And they find that they're growing tumors when they implant embryonic stem cells in people. Now, it's murder anyway. It's wrong. Even if killing one child would cure the whole world, it's wrong. You don't murder a child for that.
Oh, that's right. And it's just the misinformation about stem cells. You know, people say, hey, you know, now that we've got Obama, we can start doing stem cell research. We've already been doing we've had tremendous advances in stem cell research, but only with adult stem cells.
Adult stem cells. And now, because of this article and this research, we could understand one of the reasons why, because the genes in the human genome regulate the development of embryos far beyond what happens in animals. And so when they use a rat embryo and they have success, that doesn't mean they'll have success when they transfer that idea to humans, because the level of sophistication of the development of the embryo is so far beyond what you'll find in animals and worms.
That's right. And in fact, Science Daily had an article, I think it was in February this year, about the boy in Israel that was given embryonic stem cells, and he developed tumors within 3 years. And it's just, you know, you go to some of these embryonic stem cell sites and they misrepresent and say, oh, don't worry about it.
Right. And even if it worked better than adult stem cells, it's still killing
Absolutely.
Children. So it's wrong.
Absolutely.
We need to oppose it. But the reality is adult stem cells have delivered so much more alleviation of suffering than embryonic stem cells. But the liberals, that's not their goal. Their goal is to kill these tiny kids, to show that they're God, that they could kill them if they want to. That's their goal. If it wasn't their goal, they'd use adult stem cells, which work better, more quickly.
Much better. But this is a great point, Bob, that if you don't have these genes, there's regulatory properties to them. And if you've got a foreign gene, foreign DNA, why wouldn't we expect these not to be regulated? Now, what happens when something's not regulated? It grows uncontrollably,
and
the evidence
cancer.
Is overwhelming as tumors and cancer.
Cancers,
variably
the uncontrollable growth of abnormal cells.
That's right.
And so adult stem cells are custom made for helping us fight disease.
That's right, and our bodies aren't going to reject our own cells.
We should use them.
That's right.
Fred, there's another article in here that I just love.
I knew you'd love this one, Bob.
I just love it. I love it. I love it because I've gone to the Grand Canyon, and repeatedly what I've done is stood on the south rim of the canyon. And Fred, I don't know if this is against the law or not, but I gave unauthorized tours to tourists from all kinds of countries. They come, you know, I put on a cap. I got a cap from the Division of Wildlife once. Somebody liked my show. Put on a cap, stand there, and I give them a tour. And I point to the strata across the Grand Canyon. It's like 20 miles away on the north side, the north wall. And for as far as the eye could see, the lines are perfect. They're just perfect.
They're straight. It's a flat line.
A flat line between the strata.
So why is that important?
Well, why don't we start to look at this article,
okay,
and we'll figure it out. And the audience, I think, will figure it out too.
Okay. Well, this article is called Millions of Years Are Missing, and it's written by Dr. Ariel Roth. He's a biologist and a geologist. Mm. He's got a PhD in zoology and a master's degree in biology.
All right. He also professor of biology and chairman at Loma Linda University. And he directed research for NOAA, not the NOAA of the Bible,
yeah,
but the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He's authored over 150 articles. He's a sharp guy. And Fred, he has a quote before he gets into the geological evidence against the old Earth at the Grand Canyon and elsewhere, like in Colorado. He said this. He said, first, evolution does not even seem to be true. It requires a tremendous acceptance of one incident of extreme good luck after another, 10,000 times, what, a million times over. Look at that. Look at that. Wow, just so. Isn't that something? So he says it doesn't even seem to be true. And then even more implausible improbabilities on top of improbabilities to evolve to advanced forms. And our knowledge of physics, chemistry, and probability dictates that the evolutionary scenario is essentially impossible.
That seems to be a recurring theme with our shows of just how impossible evolution is.
Impossible and silly, and I think uneducated. Simply uneducated based on the basic laws of science, geology, the fossil record, genetics, information science, and so on. So, Fred, then you get into the gaps. He says that there are millions of years missing in the strata around the world. Where you go around the world, you see gaps. What is he talking about?
Well, it's a particular area of interest for Dr. Roth, and it's these flat gaps that are also called, the scientific word is paraconformities.
Paraconformities.
And so,
flat gaps is easier. Flat gaps.
That's much easier. So he says that there are major gaps in the layers, rock layers that should be present or missing at various localities. Second, the layers below and above the gaps are flat.
Flat.
So if you look at it in a landscape, as you described as a Grand Canyon, what you see is basically a flat layer of rock above another flat layer of rock. And so, and there's a line in between.
And the line is sometimes so perfect, it looks like a knife blade.
Absolutely.
Just perfect line. So, it's like, where were the worms? Where were the storms? Where was the rain? Where was the wind?
So you got to imagine from an evolutionist perspective, this one of these layers, there's nothing above it, you know, some millions of years ago. So over time, isn't rain, water, isn't, you know, rivers, whatever, going to be carving out and eroding the surface, Bob?
Erosion is ruthless.
Absolutely.
Erosion.
Ruthless.
Dr. Ed Holroyd in the book In 6 Days, Ed Holroyd is a dear friend of the creationist community here in Denver, PhD, great guy. He pointed out that at current erosion rates, the Himalayas would be at sea level in 10 million years. Now, the Himalayas, that's the greatest mountain range on Earth. Erosion is relentless.
Absolutely.
It's relentless. Wind and rain, snow, freezing and heating cycles.
So you're going to have a rough looking,
and animals,
you're not
going to
have
right?
a straight line. It's going to be like looking at a mountain range. You're going to see up
today,
and down.
Right.
Yeah, you'll see up and down. That's what's going to happen to a surface.
If
so
it's
why
exposed,
is it flat?
If it's exposed for, say, 10,000 years, right? Let's say Caesar 10,000 years ago put a lawn in front of his palace in Rome, and it covered 100 football fields perfectly straight. And then that's it. There were no human beings to tend it for 2,000 years. Would it be perfectly straight today?
I don't think so.
After just 2,000 years, it would be all over the place. Imagine after 100,000 years and a million years and millions, tens of millions
tens
of years.
Tens of millions of years. And it's not that we just see this phenomenon in a few places around the Earth. We see it everywhere. It's very prevalent.
And so there's a photo in this article in the latest issue of Creation Magazine. And the photo is of the Grand Canyon. And Fred, I've pointed this out to tourists so many times. And I say, look at the straight lines between hundreds of layers of strata. Look at the straight lines. Now, let me ask you, would wind and water erosion, animals, insects, plants with erosion over millions of years allow those perfectly straight boundaries for as far as the eye could see? And people look at it and they say, no.
No way.
It should be eroded with hills and valleys and gullies and all kinds of stuff. And I say, that is proof that these strata layers in the Grand Canyon and around the world where this exists, which is all over the place, they were laid down rapidly, one right after the other, so fast there was no time for major erosion at each of these flat layers.
That's right. And again, because we see them all over the Earth, and I think it does a lot of damage to the evolutionist geologic column, don't you?
It really does, because the geologic column is supposedly like a billion years old or so. And what they do is they look for fossils in the different layers, and they say that tells us whether it's the Silurian, the Ovidician, all the different layers, the Jurassic, whatever. And so at the Grand Canyon, the geologist, this is the evolutionist, the old earth atheist, they've told us which eras which ages the different strata are, and they admit that there are missing entire eras in the strata of the Grand Canyon because they're just not there.
They're just not there, yeah.
They're not there, and they have one layer that has a saber-toothed tiger, the next layer has a bat or whatever, and they say, well, we know that those are 100 million years apart. There was 100 million years of strata development all over the world, but not here. Not here, and not anywhere for as far as the eye can see, thousands of square miles, that this strata boundary exists in the southwestern United States. It's just, it's as though the time stood still for 100 million years. And if the 100 million years are missing at the Grand Canyon, they're missing all over the world. They can't be over there if they're not over here.
And he notes that even Australia is, you know, is a pretty flat continent. But it still has very irregular surfaces. There's no way that this can be explained by millions of years. Just no way.
Yeah. Like in southeast Utah, they have a photo here. Gooseneck State Park. The strata, there's 20 million missing years between two perfectly flat, unerroded strata. And just a little bit above that, there's 10 million missing years. And that's not according to creationists. We don't believe in those millions of years. That's according to the evolutionists, the atheists. In the Grand Canyon, they have 120 million years missing. There are all these fabulous photos in this article. They identify the strata and they tell you how many years are missing. And it's simply not possible for 6 million years to pass with no erosion.
It's not possible. It's a religion to believe that evolution did that.
It is a religion. Dr. Ariel Roth points out that erosion creates a highly irregular surface. Therefore, since erosion tends to produce highly irregular surfaces over our continents, we can see in the last few thousand years, we know that millions and millions of years did not transpire between these layers. They were laid down rapidly, and that's just so cool.
He's actually quoted as saying that these flat gaps are so common that they pretty much challenge the validity of the whole geologic timescale.
The whole thing.
And he's an accomplished geologist.
This one photo, Fred, this is at the Coconino Sandstone in the Grand Canyon. He says it's a knife edge, and it is, isn't
yeah,
it?
If you look at it.
It's like it was drawn by a draftsman.
Yeah, it's like a very well done cake.
It's just amazing. 6 million years of erosion that happened between that rock layer and the one above it, and there's no erosion. I mean, wouldn't there have been a squirrel to bury some nuts or something? It's just absurd. What a great article to disprove the millions, the billion-year timescale of the geologic column that does not exist in the real world. It only exists in evolution books.
That's right. Speaking of that, one of the articles in here is celebrating Darwin. So we're talking about how evolution is a religion. There's an editorial by Taz Walker, the 2009 Darwin Celebrations. I mean, they've got all these celebrations going on.
All over the world, big celebrations.
There's a lot of great scientists of the past. Isaac Newton, Kepler. There's a long list.
Copernicus. Yeah. Louis Pasteur, Gregor Mendel, genetics.
Yeah. And yet, do these guys get celebrated? No. Guess who gets celebrated? Darwin gets celebrated.
Darwin. And the celebration is extreme. Massive celebrations around the world. Nature magazine has launched their special issue featuring his life. The Natural History Museum in London dedicated a website. Science organizations that are working with museums, universities to promote Darwin. There are conferences. These celebrations are for the 150 years since Origin of the Species, 200 years since Darwin's born. The things they're doing, Fred, in the United Kingdom, Australia, the U.S., China, South Korea, Portugal, Germany, Egypt, Hong Kong, Stanford University will jet 90 pilgrims along the route of Darwin's Beagle Voyage. There are art exhibits, music festivals, paintings, sculpture, orchestral works praising Darwin. And where is all this for Isaac Newton, arguably the greatest scientist who ever lived?
This isn't about science. It's about religion. That's why this is happening.
It's about religion.
That's the point of this article. Well, it's right on the head.
It's about religion. That's right. And if we could compare this issue of Creation Magazine, which is maybe the greatest single magazine edition I've ever read, to, I picked this up, Fred, in an airport, Discover Magazine.
Okay.
You've read these, right?
Oh, yeah.
I've read these for 25 years. This issue of Discover Magazine is total garbage. This is the most pathetic excuse for a magazine. The articles, it's all, the whole thing, forget science. Their whole thing is they hate God.
Yeah.
The whole thing is they hate God. So I'll give you an example just on the cover here. Alien Worlds Revealed, Conception to Consciousness, How Google is Making You Smarter. The Violent Birth of Stars. There's an article in here about evolution and sex. They did an actual study in adult nightclubs.
Oh, man.
You know, adult nightclubs. This article, How Google is Making You Smarter, The Extended Mind, I think it classifies as the most boring and the most stupid article I've ever read in my life. And I love Google.
Yeah.
It's the most stupid. They're saying that if your memory and your mind and your brain, and if you write somebody's phone number on a piece of paper and then you need to call them and you look at that, they said it's an extension of your mind, the paper.
Jeez. Oh,
and it's like, it is such a non-observation. It's such a non-ish. It's such a stupid thing. And they're desperately trying. Here, Darwin 7, the machine that thinks. People read that. Evolutionists, atheists, they think machines think. Machines can't think. It's so ignorant.
Well, remember when they got all those monkeys and put them in a room because they wanted to try to prove Hawking's theory about how an infinite number of monkeys could type out one of Shakespeare's sonnets?
Methinks it is a weasel
And all they did was end up hammering on the letter S, and they defecated on the machine. And one of the guys was quoted, I actually just pulled it up. He said, the work was interesting but had little scientific value except to show that the infinite monkey theory is flawed. So you had to spend money to determine that. Yeah. You had to spend taxpayer dollars to reach that conclusion.
Right.
You know, that magazine, Bob, Discover Magazine, has gotten so bad. As far as I'm concerned, it belongs in the fiction side of my book collection.
Yeah. Yeah, the fiction side. That's a great point. And this article in Creation Magazine points out they're euphoric over Darwin because Darwin, as Huxley said, Julian Huxley, he said, Darwin removed the whole idea of God as the creator. And Darwin removed God.
Yep.
That's why they're excited. Richard Dawkins said Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. None of this is true. Darwin didn't do that because his ideas have been disproved. The tree of life has been just completely debunked by evolutionists, the tree of life of all things, which was one of Darwin's two key ideas and debunked. So, Fred, we're out of time today, but next Friday, the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship has a meeting here in Denver. Could you tell us about it?
Sure. We're meeting at Holly Hills Church in South Denver. Go to youngearth.org for directions. And we're going to be showing an exclusive showing of in Darwin's Footsteps. It's a movie put out by CMI, the people who make this magazine, coincidentally.
This is a big budget film.
It's a big budget film, and I've heard it's just excellent. It's not quite available
yet
to the public.
This is a pre-release screening.
Pre-release screening.
For the listeners of Bob and Yurt Live and the members of Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And this is going to show all over the world, and here in Denver, we're going to get to see it next Friday night, at Holly Hills Church.
That's right, and it's called The Voyage That Shook the World.
All right, youngearth.org. Fred Williams, thanks for Real Science Friday Show.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, we're out of time. Maranatha, what a great school, and our website is kgov.com.